Okay, we're going to go ahead and get started. Good morning, everyone. I'm Greg Daniel, Fellow and Managing Director here at the Engelberg Center at Brookings. Thank you all for joining us for our continuing series on public webinars on the active medical product surveillance at FDA. Just as a very short background, as many of you may know, the announcement of the Sentinel Initiative followed the passage of the Food and Drug Administration Amendments Act of 2007, or FDA. FDA mandated that the FDA develop a national electronic system for monitoring medical product safety after products reach the market. Sentinel's pilot project is called MiniSentinel. MiniSentinel utilizes electronic healthcare data, including administrative claims and electronic clinical data, to conduct active surveillance. MiniSentinel has far surpassed the data access goals put forth by Congress in FDA and regularly provides FDA with rapid and actionable information on post-market utilization of medical products, occurrence of health outcomes, and potential safety risks related to the use of specific medical products. While MiniSentinel has been very useful for conducting active surveillance studies on a variety of medical products, it is vital to continue exploring and testing different statistical methods as well as other analytic methods for detecting adverse events in order to better protect public health. This is important because it is not possible for drug sponsors to identify every possible adverse event associated with a new drug during clinical trials that precede approval by FDA. Ultimately, regulators will have to rely on to some extent on safety data gathered in the post-market setting. The value of this data in protecting public health is dependent upon the methods used to analyze and draw conclusions from it. Today, our speakers will provide an overview of their findings on the longitudinal likelihood ratio test methods for detecting adverse events and the importance of this development in the context of the Sentinel Initiative. We have two speakers this morning. Ram Tiwari is Associate Director in the Immediate Office of Biostatistics at CDER at FDA, and Lan Huang, Mathematical Statistician, Division of Biometrics, Office of Biostatistics at CDER as well. Before we kick off with both of those presentations, I'd like to provide just some housekeeping remarks. We encourage all of you to submit questions throughout today's presentations. During the presentation, if you do have questions, please submit those online in the chat tab in the lower right-hand side of the screen as you think of them. Those should go to Jonathan Bryan. You'll see his name there, so submit the questions to Jonathan Bryan. Just as a reminder, please make sure that the microphone on your telephone is muted by either pressing mute or the button star 6. However, to unmute, you must press star 7 in order to speak. After the presentations, when you do submit your questions, I'll call on you for you to read your question to everyone dialed in. If you do experience technical difficulties, please either email Jonathan Bryan through the chat box or call WebEx Tech Support at 1-866-229-3239. So with that, I will turn it over to Ram to begin the presentation. Ram, are you online?
Yes, I'm online, and thank you very much, Greg, for a brief introduction of the course and also of Dr. Lan Huang. I'm here with Dr. Lan Huang, and we are going to give a presentation on likelihood ratio-based tests for longitudinal safety data. Next slide, please. This is our FDA disclaimer that the views expressed by the speakers, that is me and Ms. Long, of this talk are our own and do not necessarily represent those of FDA's. Next slide. The presentation is based on three key publications, one that appeared in JASA 2011, that is Basic Likelihood Ratio Test and its application for the FDA AIRS database, and then extension of that to longitudinal likelihood ratio tests that appeared in Statistics in Medicine just recently in 2014, and then a review article summarizing the work that we have done over the years. Next slide, please. So outline of the talk is that I am going to present a very brief introduction of basic likelihood ratio test method and also its application to observational database, which is large database consisting of FDA AERS database. AERS stands for Adverse Event Reporting System. The method could be applied to other databases. For example, WHO has a database, BG base, or it could be also applied to adverse events from devices or vaccine safety. Then Dr. Lon Hong is going to take over and will present longitudinal LRT for data that has exposure information. And finally, we will end up with a short discussion. Next slide. So as I mentioned that the first part of the presentation is going to be on large databases such as the FDA AERS database, WHO BG base, and the CDRH, this is device safety database. And there are several methods in frequentist domain and also in Bayesian domain, and also some are in OMOP. However, I'm not going to cover the Bayesian methods here. That's for something at another presentation. So we will focus very specifically on the likelihood ratio test-based method, which is the frequentist method. And objective of this presentation is going to be given a large database, we are going to look for the signals for the drugs or signals for the adverse events. The methods that we are going to present can be also applied to clinical database, and Dr. Hong is going to give an application of clinical database, which is proton pump inhibitors database. FDA has a large database on PPIs, and also the method can be used for both active surveillance and passive surveillance. Next slide, please. So here is how the FAERS data or FDA AERS data can be summarized in a data matrix form. So think of a large data matrix consisting of 16,000 or more adverse events and 6,000 drugs. So drugs are here columns and adverse events are rows. So think of this as 16,000 by 6,000 data matrix. And the number of columns here are drugs, and the number of rows here are the adverse events. For a particular adverse event I and a particular drug J, Nij is the total number of reports we have in the database that come from people who take the drug or from their healthcare providers such as doctors or insurance companies and all that. So Nij is the total number of reports for a particular adverse event I and drug J combination, and this is for a particular year, for example 2013, and this Nij can be considered by year or in a cumulative way. So Nij is the total number of reports. Ni dot is the total number of reports for the adverse event I, that is the sum of all the Nij across the column, that is row total, and N dot J is the column total, that is the total number of reports in the data matrix for the drug J, and N dot dot is the grand total, that is the total number of reports we have in the database, and it is in millions. So it's a huge database, and what do we mean by when we say we are going to find a signal? So we are usually interested in a particular drug. Say, for example, drug J, and J is fixed. We want to look for the signals of adverse events. So given a drug J, we may be interested in signals of adverse events, or given an adverse event such as MI, we may be interested in signals of drugs that are related to that adverse event I, in this case MI. So what we mean by a signal is that, well, adverse event I for a given drug J is a signal if Nij is very large compared to some threshold value. And that threshold value is expected count usually, and that's taken as the marginal product, that is Ni dot multiplied by N dot J divided by the grand total. So if the observed frequency or observed count Nij is too large compared to expected count, we may think of that pair of adverse event and drug as a signal. So we will start from there, but you might notice that one can also interpret a signal if Nij is very large compared to Ni dot, which is the total number of reports for that adverse event, and compare that with the grand total N dot J, that is the total number of reports for the drug J with N dot dot. So one can think of the Nij as the IS pair, I and J as the signal, if the observed count is very large compared to expected count, or the reporting rate, Nij divided by Ni dot, is very large compared to N dot J divided by N dot dot. Next slide, please. So, as I mentioned, there are 16,000 or more adverse events in the drug database. For any given drug J, we have 16,000 adverse events to compare. So when drug J is fixed, we have 16,000 2x2 tables that we can form, such as this here. Notice that in this table, we are looking, drug J is fixed, adverse event I is there, and I could be any one of the 16,000 adverse events. And this is a 2x2 table, and it is Nij is the total number of reports for the adverse event I in drug J. Ni dot is the total number of reports for the adverse I in the database. N dot J is the total number of reports for the drug J. And again, N dot dot is the grand total. All these other entries can be obtained by subtracting. So usually what we do is from large data matrix that we had, we form such a 2x2 table, and how many, it depends on how many adverse events we have. So there are 16,000 such 2x2 tables. Now, our goal is to compare the reporting rate of adverse event I for each of the 16,000 with other adverse events. Now, there are 16,000 or more such adverse events, so there are 16,000 or more relative reporting rates to be compared. And this raises question of multiplicity, and I will talk more about it, but there are such 16,000 or more 2x2 tables. Many of the Bayesian methods and frequentist methods usually work by with such 2x2 tables. Next slide. So the approach that we are taking here is going to be a test-based approach, and we are going to model that the number of reports for the pair adverse event I and drug J, Nij, is coming from a Poisson model, and also for other events, all other events, and it's coming from also from Poisson distribution. Here, PI and QI are the reporting rates. PI is the reporting rate for the adverse event I, and QI is the reporting rate for other adverse events. So we are going to compare PI with QI, that is the reporting rate of the IS adverse events with the other adverse events. Now, if PI and QI are same for all I 16,000 of adverse events, if PI and QI are same, then we do not have signal. If PI is greater than QI for at least one, then there is at least one signal we have. So the idea is to assume that under H0 there are no signals, that is all the PI and QI are same, and under the alternative, for at least one adverse event I, PI is greater than Q. Now, because this is a test-based approach, we have to obtain the likelihood ratio under the alternative and under the null hypothesis. Also, we have to derive the estimate of the parameters P star and PI and QI under the null hypothesis and under the alternative hypothesis. These are the usually standard approach in the likelihood ratio test. Once we have got the maximum likelihood estimators of the parameters under the null and under the alternative, we define the likelihood ratio as the maximum of the likelihood ratio under the alternative divided by the maximum of the likelihood ratio under the null hypothesis. Next slide, please. And if we work out some mathematics and simplify it, then we get a statistic, let's call it LRIJ. This is the likelihood statistic, likelihood ratio statistic associated with the IS adverse event and for the fixed drug J. And that has a formula given like this, but the test statistic that we are going to use is not LRIJ, but maximum over all adverse event I. So we take LRIJ, compute it for each I. There are 16,000 values of LRI for given drug J, and we have then ordered them from largest to smallest and worked with the maximum of the LRIJ. That is what is written in, at the bottom of that expression. So sometimes we work with the maximum of the likelihood ratio. Sometimes we can also work with the log of the maximum of the log of the likelihood ratio, and they are monotonic functions, so it sometimes it's easier to work with the maximum of LR. Next slide, please. Now, the expression that we gave earlier in the previous slide can be reparameterized or can be rewritten using the expected count. So, as I mentioned, when we are talking about what do we mean by signal comparing NIJ by its expected value EIJ, this expression here involves the NIJ and EIJ. And this is the test statistic here, LRIJ, and we take maximum over all the 16,000 adverse events. So we work with LRIJ and this is the maximum, and we can write it in terms of the expected count EIJ. And if there are covariates such as binary covariates like age, gender and gender or any other binary covariate, even if you have got age, you can stratify and you can stratify by gender, and you can compute the expected values for each stratum and then sum over all the strata and you can get the EIJ. That will be the adjusted expected count. Next slide. So we already have now the test statistic, which is the maximum of the LRIJ computed over all the 16,000 adverse events. Now, we don't know what is the distribution of the LRI, maximum of the LRIJ. It is analytically untractable. So in order to derive the distribution of LRIJ under H0, we need under H0 to get the threshold value, we generate the data from Poisson distribution under H0. So under H0, because we are assuming that the reporting rates are same, so for each N1J, N2J, NIJ, these are the number of reports in the JS column, each one has a Poisson distribution with the same reporting rate. Some of that is also Poisson, because some of the Poisson is a Poisson. So conditional on the number of total reports for the drug J, that is N dot J, the distribution of the reports in the JS column, N1J, N2J, NIJ, is multinomial. So it is a multinomial distribution with parameters N dot J, which is the total number of reports for the JS drug, and the cell probabilities are just relative rates, N1 dot over N dot dot, Ni dot over N dot dot. These are the cell probabilities, and one can generate the data under H0 from the multinomial distribution, you can do it for 10,000 times, and then you compute for each such generated data, you compute the maximum of LR, and then you can find empirical distribution of the maximum of LR, and from there you can find a threshold value depending on the choice of critical level, such as alpha equal to 0.05. And that is given in the next slide. Slide 12, please. Yeah, so here what I just mentioned, we are interested in finding the distribution of maximum of LR under H0. And as I said, it is not analytically tractable, so we use Monte Carlo procedure to obtain it. And as I mentioned, the data is generated using the multinomial distribution with parameter N dot J, which is the sum of the reports from the JS column, and cell probabilities are reporting rate ratio divided by the grand total. So N1 dot over N dot dot and so on. So next slide. Now, this is also, again, I mentioned you how to calculate the p-value. You have the data. You find out the maximum of LR value from the data, and then generate 9,999 simulated data null data sets. And for each of the simulated data sets, obtain maximum of LR value. So in total, you have 10,000 maximum LR values. Now, using that and using alpha equal to 0.05, you can find the 95th percentile of these 10,000 maximum LR values. And reject if the observed maximum LR value from the data is greater than threshold. So this is what we do. We obtain the maximum LR from the data and from the simulated value and find the 95th percentile of the empirical distribution, and if maximum LR from the observed data is greater than threshold, then we reject it in our hypothesis. And we can find the p-value associated with the maximum LR by looking at the rank of the observed MLR divided by 10,000. Now, we are going to use the gatekeeping step-down procedure. If we have rejected the null hypothesis using the maximum LR value, then we have saved our alpha type 1 error, and we can step down and go to the second maximum and third maximum and so on. And if we second maximum is also greater than threshold, we reject H-naught. If third maximum is greater than LR, we reject H-naught. So this way, we are able to detect the signals of adverse events starting from the maximum, going to the second maximum, third maximum, until we find for some adverse event the maximum of LR does not exceed the threshold value, and we stop there. So this way we can detect all the number of signals that are associated with the drug. So whatever I just said, this is the same thing in the picture. You are comparing the maximum of LR value from the data and looking the rank of that among the 10,000 based on the simulated data and the observed data. Next slide, please. So, this is the basic philosophy or method theory behind the likelihood ratio test statistic that we developed and reported in JASA paper. We have developed an in-house tool on signal detection, this likelihood ratio test, and this tool is also now available in some commercial packages. I'm not going to go into that detail, but our in-house tool, what it does is, if you are interested in finding the signal for any drug, now these are the signals of adverse events. We can get the signals using that. Or if you are interested in finding the signals of drugs for any adverse events, such as MI, you can get the signals from this tool. Next slide, please. So here is what we did. We applied our in-house tool of the likelihood ratio test, and this is for myocardial infarction. So we are interested in a particular MI here. That is our adverse event is MI here, and we are now going to look what are the signals of the drugs that are associated with MI. So in this tool, we have also other methods. There are different methods here, but the last column gives the likelihood ratio test. So there were 1,416 drugs with positive reporting reports associated with myocardial infarction, and the total number of reports that we received for MI were 26,848. This is for 2013 database only just for 1 year database 2013. 26,848 is the total number of reports for myocardial infarction, and using that, out of 1,416, there were 51 drugs that were detected as a signal with LRT method. And those 51 signals of the drugs, top 10 are listed here. And you can see the top one is Avandia. Rosy glate zone is the top signal that is associated with MI. And these column given there for LRT less than 0.05. This is, we have taken alpha equal to 0.05. One can take different value of alpha and maybe be more stringent, maybe like 0.025. But for any given alpha, one can find the signals using this procedure. And these are the top 10 signals out of 51 that I have reported here. Next, please. So I will start with the basic introduction of the LRT, and now Dr. Huang is going to take over from here and talk about how the basic LRT can be implemented or modified for the longitudinal likelihood ratio test that can be used for active surveillance and also for our clinical drug safety database. Yes, Huang. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. Here I'm going to introduce the longitudinal LRT methodology. As you can see from the table, the basic LRT can do some different things here. But we, in addition to those things, we also want to be able to handle data with exposure information. We can handle clinical trial data, can do the analysis over time with controlled error. So we developed this new methodology. Next slide, please. This new methodology can generally handle, you know, you look for AE signals for drug or for drug signals for AE. It controls error rate and false discovery rate also. Next slide. Next slide. I want to introduce some basic terms for this methodology. First, countable cases. When you calculate the N, remember Ram mentioned the matrix for the AE counts. So how do we count those cases? So those AEs that occur during the exposure period, we count them in those matrix. That's in our application. But in other cases, some people also think AE occur several days after the drug exposure, they also want to count it. For example, like vaccine data. It could be AE after 7 days or AE after 14 days. You still can count the AE as your adverse event in that research. So that's definition for countable cases. And then drug exposure. How do you define drug exposure? We have three ways to define it: event time, person time, exposure time. I will explain that later. And also time of analysis. You want to study this adverse event over time. You can do it over calendar time, or you can do it using the time after drug exposure. So for calendar time, you can do like 2000, 2001, 2003. It's very simple, very straightforward. And time after drug exposure is like, it's after drug exposure, maybe 1 day after exposure, seven days after exposure, 30 days after the exposure, or 1 year after drug exposure. And all the patients that can take the drug at different time, calendar time, but in terms of the time after drug exposure, maybe they have the same time of drug exposure. So just so you know, you can use different ways to do that. And in our application, we use calendar time definition because it's simple. Next slide. This is definition for event time. So look at this picture. We have three patients, S1, S2, and S3. And for each patient, we have the drug exposure from the beginning of the start, a single start at the beginning of the drug exposure to the double start at the end of the drug exposure. So during this drug exposure period, S1 has AE1, AE2, AE3, and again recurrence of AE1. So that's AEs that occur during this drug exposure. And everybody, you know, everyone that could have one AE or multiple AEs, so in this case. And we define the event time to be the time from the beginning of the drug exposure to the occurrence of the event. So it's the P, that's event time, for ICE AE, for GS drug, and S subject. Okay, so next slide. Person time is a special case of event time. So you look at this slide, you can see we have three patients again, but we only have one unique AE event for each person during the drug exposure. For example, death or myocardial infarction. We only have one event here for that person in the whole exposure. And then in this case, we still have the event time, so it's from the beginning of the exposure to the event. But because there's only one event, we can call it person time because one person will have one event here. Next slide. Exposure time is different. Exposure time is just from the beginning of the drug exposure, that's the start, to the end of drug exposure for each patient. So do not matter, we do not mind where the AE occurred, but this is total exposure for the patient. So you can see there are many, many AEs in that exposure period, but we count the P, that's exposure information for the patient is P, for the drug B and the patient S, the subject S. Okay, next slide. Now we will work with those three exposure definitions to build our statistical models. First, we work with event time to build our model. So remember, Ron mentioned that we have the matrix for the case. That's on the left side. That's I by J matrix he mentioned for the count. If you only have the count data, you got NIJ, you got all those marginal totals for the case. And in addition to those count, we have also recommendation. Now we have exposure information. We have event time, so we can get the PIJ, that's a sum of the event time over the subject, and then we've got the PIJ for each cell, that's for each I and each J, AE and drug. And we also can have the margin totals for those P, so we've got a PIJ, we've got PIDA, we've got PDADA, whatever things, those marginals. And we can calculate for each look K. Now remember, we want to do longitudinal analysis. We have this data for each look K. So, you can imagine that we have the K. Now, in my case, I have 5K. So I have K1 to K5. And those, I have those matrix for 5K, 5 loops. Yeah. And so now I want to build my model. Next slide. Using that data. So imagine that, now I have NIJ for each K. So my NIJ follow Poisson distribution with the probability for that row, that's I, with the exposure information I got for that row. That's the first line. And then the second one is the remaining NIJ for that particular column. Remember, we're working with a fixed drug J, for example. So we are working with a column. So the, for the remaining rows, all the counts sum together, also follow Poisson distribution with another probability with the other exposure information sum together. And the P and Q, the rate of the event, like we said, that is event rate. So if you calculate the ratio, that's RR, that's a relative event rate. And the law hypothesis is that RR is 1 for all those AEs, for all those rows. Next slide. So using this assumption, we can write out our lactose ratio function using Poisson model. And then, of course, we can calculate the lactose ratio estimation for those P and Q, as Ron mentioned before. But the key point here is that now we have the exposure information, we have P here. So basically we replace the N and the marginal total for the N as NIDA and NDADA with PIDA and PDADA in the formulation here. So for each row we got LR, and for, of course for each K, but here, you know, you calculate this for each K. That's your loops. So we get the maximum of LR over the I rows, that's the AE, for each look, K. That's our statistic. So this is for the event time. Let's go to person time. Next slide. Person time is much simpler. Think about the big matrix. We reduce the big matrix to a smaller matrix because in person time case, we only have one AE of interest, only one AE for each person. So we only have one column. We can change the meaning of the AE and drug column and row. Sometimes we have column of AE, or sometimes we've got column of drug. Depends on your research interest. In this case, we won't have the column of AE, only one AE, and we have two drugs, only drug one and, for example, treatment drug and placebo. So we have two drugs. That's total row is two. So we have a simple working structure for the count and also for the exposure. Now let's go to the model. Next slide. Next slide. And just to use the same formulation we had before, we have the count for the first drug following Poisson distribution with the probability for the first drug with the exposure, and we have the count for the second drug following Poisson distribution with probability for the second drug count with the exposure for the second drug. And then the conditional distribution the is very simple now, it's binomial distribution. And now we're testing if the probability for the first drug is the same as the probability for the second drug. the ratio, relative risk is PD by Q, which is not a risk because it's each person has only one event. So it's a relative risk. We're testing if the relative risk is one or not one. Go to the next slide. Okay. Now it's the same thing. You have the likelihood ratio. You just plug in those estimation for those P and Q. That's your model and from Poisson model, and you get the ratio. So you get a very simple expression in the end. You have the same way to calculate your maximum likelihood ratio for each look K. Same as event time, just special case. We call this methodology a sequential LRT. It's simple. And let's go to another slide. And sequential LRT is very, next slide. Sequential LRT is very similar to CSSP and maximum SPRT. CSSP is conditional sequential sampling procedure. So the details are in the paper. Here I just want to mention here it's very similar to two methodologies to handle a single AE and two drugs. All these methodologies are very similar. Next slide. Now let's work with exposure time cases. So now I have an AE column. So AE is the GSAE. I have the GSAE there. And I have many drugs, not only two drugs. I have many eye drugs. And also I could have the exposure for those drugs. So you can see the P is the exposure for each drug. And the P actually is the sum over a subject. It's the sum of the exposure for each subject, for each drug. And we are showing that one person take only one drug. So one person take a unique drug, not the several drugs together. So the P is just the sum of the exposure over a subject. So this is a matrix for the count and the matrix for the P. Again, we can go to write out our model using those parameters. Next slide. Now, our model is Poisson model again. We have the count for one drug follow Poisson distribution with the probability for the drug with the exposure information. And we have the count for the other drugs summed together for a Poisson distribution with the probability Q and also the exposure for all the other drugs. And the ratio is P and Q, that the relative risk of GSAE for drug D versus other drugs together. So the meaning is a little bit different. And we're testing if the ratio is one or not. And then next slide. The ratio is just the same. The formula is very similar to the earlier ones. And we have the P and Q. We just using the model, we got our estimation. We plug in those estimators. And now you can see the estimator will be a little bit different because the model is slightly different. The parameter is different. But notice that we have the P, that's exposure in the denominator. That's exposure time. And we can get a maximum error again for each K and for each GS column. Next slide. So now we have three models for different kind of scenario. We have event time, we have person time, we have this for exposure time. We have those statistics for the three cases. Now we want to do a statistic inference. As Ron mentioned before, we don't have closed form for those statistics, so we have to use Monte Carlo simulation to get the log data and then get the statistics from the log data. So what we do is we simulate log data, assuming that the risk or the event risk are the same for all the rows. So can you go to next slide 34? Yes. So basically, we simulate our data using multinomial distribution. Imagine that you simulate your count. You have this information for the exposure. So also, we have the total number of sample size. That's NIJ. So we simulate this NIJ, assuming that the risk is the same for all the rows or the rate is the same for all the rows. So we can simulate those counts for event time, the person time, or also for the exposure time cases. So we can simulate them cumulatively for each look K. We can also simulate them for each time period and then sum them together to have accumulative data. But anyway, so when we simulate the log data, we are shown that there's no signal. The risk are the same or the rate are the same for all the rows. And then once you have those log data, you can calculate your statistics from those log data. And as I mentioned, you can get an empirical distribution for the statistics. Go to slide 35. Yes. So you compare your maximum ARR from the observed data with the statistics of maximum ARR from simulated log data for each time period. And if your p-value is smaller than the alpha pre-specified, you got single. But because we are doing the analysis over time, we want to control the error over time. So what we do is we want to use alpha spending function to specify the alpha in each case. Number 36, slide number 36. Yeah. So we can use Marathon function to define our alpha in each case, either increasing or decreasing. In our case later, we'll use the decreasing function on the right side because the function does not depend on the total number of K. It's a decreasing function. Next slide. In addition to those Marathon functions, you can use other functions if you are kind of interested. You can use, you know, Oberon Fleming or Pocock, whatever other boundary to help you to split the alpha. And once you have those alpha splitted, you can imagine that for each look of K, we can look for signals from the top to the thick, to the second one, to the third one, to the fourth one, as Ram mentioned before. So for each look, you control your arrow. At the same time, you can go from one look to another look to another look. Also, you can control your arrow rate. So overall, you control your arrow rate by this way. Now let's go to the application, slide number 38. We apply this methodology to the pooled clinical trial data for PPI study. PPI is a class of drugs that decrease gastric acid secretion through inhibition of the prompton pump. In a recent study, it has been found that these PPI drugs are associated with increased risk of hip fractures, and this may be caused. This is attributed to osteoporosis caused by PPIs. I get the pool data from FDA OTS, OCS legacy database. Here I want to thank Dr. Dongjun Luo's team in OTS OCS who developed the clinical trial database and support our method development. In those trial data, the PPIs were concomitantly used with the test drugs for treating osteoporosis among the patients. Those are women who is older, like age bigger than 50 years old. They're using this drug, the test drug for treating their osteoporosis, but at the same time, some of them are taking PPIs concomitantly. Next slide. 39, yes. In the pool data, we have, actually in the data, we have, there have five PPIs in this, in all the trials, you know, there have total of five PPIs. When you use the PPI drugs together with the test drug, is a mixture of use of PPIs. So we cannot separate the use of those single PPIs. So we just treat the PPI drugs as a class, just treat them as just a single drug, PPIs. And in the pool data, we have 10 trials. Of course, in the total database, they have more than that, they have more trials, but we have, in this pool data, we have 10 trials. Sample size for each trial are range from hundreds to thousands. The total number of subjects with concomitant PPIs is about 10% of the total sample size. So imagine that we have thousands of patients in the total data and about 10% they use PPIs concomitantly. And then we define our drugs in this way. There are seven test drugs in the trial, in all the 10 trials together. Of course, one trial could have only one drug, a large trial could have a lot of drugs, but in all trials together we have seven test drugs. Some of the trials are single on trial, some of the trials are a double on trial, some of the trials are three on trials. And we have seven test drugs, and we define that because some of the trials have PPIs plus. So we define seven test drugs plus PPIs as another seven drugs. So we have total 14 drugs in the exploration. And we use calendar time for exploration here for simplicity. So we have capital K is five period. Some of the trials start earlier, some of the trials start later, but the total period of the trials is from 1906 to 2007. So we split our time as 1906 to 2007, 96 to 99, 96 to 97, 96 to 99 96 to 2013, 96 to 2007. So you can see that we have those seven, we have five looks. And alpha is 0.05. We use monotone decreasing function to define our alpha in each look K. As you can see here, we have alpha 1 to alpha 5 pre-specified. Okay, now let's go to results. Next slide, slide number 40. This is a result from the event time-based analysis. We explore this for each drug. So you imagine that we have 14 drugs. We explore this for each drug. So here I only show you the results from placebo and placebo plus PPI. And you can see that we have five looks, look from 1 to 5. Sample size at NDG from 1,000 to 50,000, a big sample size. And AE numbers, AE signals from 3 to 70 or something, you can see that. Note that there, the AE signals may not be the same for each look. Some of the AE signals they're the same, so it's kind of a stable signal. Some of the AE signals not stable. So it's different. You have to think about, you know, how to handle different AE signals. But among those AE signals, some of them are still associated with osteoporosis. For example, muscle cramp, bone pain. So I put those AE there in the slide. And the relative risk is about 4. So the relative risk of this AE compared with all the other AEs in the placebo group is 4 or 2, or, you know, you can see the number there. But the issue is we got this for all the drugs, and we do not see a very clear pattern because all the drugs have some kind of AE associated with osteoporosis. But anyway, so just the 1 week to do the analysis. Next slide. And then we, using a simple form of event analysis as personal analysis, the method is, we call it sequential ART methodology. Now we only have one AE. Here we use one AE of interest. We use a composite AE, what we call AE-OST. This AE includes many, many PT10s, AE10s associated with osteoporosis. Here I want to thank the team again from OCS. The researchers, the user methodology to determine the composite AE. Before, they don't load the data, they just define it using their knowledge. So this is pre-specified endpoint, you can see that, before you analyze it, composite AE. Only one, single. And we are looking for the first occurrence of this composite AE because the methodology can only handle one unique case. And we compare two drugs because placebo group, they don't have other test drugs, so we don't have confounding effect. So we choose placebo plus PPI drugs versus placebo. So you can imagine here it's a single effect of PPI, not compounding with other test drugs. Sample size is from 50 to 500 for this five look, K from 1 to 5. And the relative risk of PPI group versus placebo-only group is from 5 to about 2. But from p-value from sequential RRT, is very small. So at the first look K, the p-value is less than the pre-specified alpha 1, so we start the search by sequential methodology. But notice that in your research in the safety area, if you want, you can still keep doing monitor your safety signals. Even though you do not, even though you see a signal, you want to see if the signal is stable or not, maybe you want to still keep going to see if the signal in the future looks. And looks like here I want to show the results from the model we use, exposure time model. What we have here is still the multiple, this is we still have the composite AE, but here we look not only a single AE event, but multiple occurrence of this composite AE. So you can imagine one person could have many, many AE occurrence. Imagine that. And now, we still compare two groups, placebo plus PPI, two drugs, use the longitudinal ART methodology. So the sample size for the look from 1 to 5 is from 60 to 700, bigger than the one before we have, because we have a recurrence of the composite AE. And relative risk of PPI group versus placebo-only group is from 6 to about 2, decreasing but becomes stable around 2. And p-value very significant for all the period. So the PPI group is a signal for this composite AE, this particular composite AE. Note that when the researchers do research, they can change the definition of the AE that interest. So So for this particular AE, it's a single for all the periods, and we do not stop the monitoring on single over time. We want to see if it's a stable single, keep going. Next slide. This is the last results we have for the exposure time. Now, it's a very comprehensive result. We have the composite AE. We have multiple occurrence of the composite AE, and we're looking for many, many drugs. Now we're looking for all the 14 drugs together. Here, the RR is a relative risk of that particular drug compared with all other 13 drugs. Okay? Now, let's say we have the NDAG from the sample size from 100 something to 6,000, much more because we have more drugs there. And the relative risk for the placebo, you can see here, for the loop K, K equal 1, for the loop K equal 1, we have only the placebo plus PPI group as a single with relative risk 6. And then when we go to loop 2, we have again the placebo plus PPI only group as a single. And then when we go to loop 3, we got one more single, that's PTH plus PPI, with that's a single with relative risk 6 and p-value very small. And you can see when we go to another period, we get more signals because the sample size getting increased. We get more data coming in. But look at one interesting thing is that for the placebo plus PPI group, for the LASO plus PPI group, and also for the PHP plus PPI group, all these groups that are with PPI, and they have the stable, they have kind of stable signals over the period, over the loops. And but Benza plus PPI, they have the signals for period 4. But in the face look, it's not single. It's not kind of stable. Maybe it's not a real single. Maybe we need more data to explore. So that's the end of that's the results we have. In the end, we have a discussion. So next slide. Slide number 44. Yeah. So as I mentioned, we can handle different cases. We have multiple AE. We have single AE. We have, you know, different drugs, different time of analysis, which we evaluate rate or risk. The definition of the exposure could be different. The definition of the AE could be different. One thing I want to mention is that when we do the pooled analysis, we pull all the cases together from all the studies. We ignore the study effect, but and there may be some study effect there because the sample size is different or, you know, all the features. So we are thinking to have measure for incorporating the study effect in the future development. Next slide. There's some reference for the study. So that's the end of study. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Here for your question.
Yeah, this is Ram again. Just wanted to very mention that it's a lot of work here and a lot of material that we try to present in 1 hour, starting from basic LRT, going into longitudinal LRT that uses exposure information, different definitions of exposure, and then we applied it to PPI, a large database here, and tried to show that the method can consider for any given adverse event, it can find signals of multiple drugs, not just one drug. So this work that we presented is also related to sequential method that has been developed in MiniSentinel. However, our method is somewhat different in the sense that it can look multiple drugs and multiple AEs sequentially or over time. So I would like to thank again the participants, organizers, and we will be very happy to follow up on the questions if we cannot answer here through the email. Again, thanks for your patience. Thank you very much.
All right, great. Thank you, Ram and Lon. It's great to hear the about the new developments that you all have been working on to advance the statistical analysis capabilities within surveillance. I would like to open the floor, if you will, to any questions from the audience. Again, if you do have questions, please use the chat box in the lower right-hand corner of your screen. Just submit those questions to Jonathan Bryan, and I'll read those. So to give you time to submit some of those questions, I do have a more of a general question, and this goes to either Ram or Lon. But you know, can you just comment on from your perspective on what some challenges or what next steps might be for broader implementation within the Sentinel system for this kind of technique?
As far as the methodology is concerned, whether we are talking about the methodology you presented or methodology that have been developed by many Sentinel working groups, such as by Jennifer Nelson and Andrea Cook, the methodology we can apply, we are still having challenges for getting the access to the data. That's our biggest challenge, because these are data partners and they are the ones who control the data. We develop the methodology and we have to implement the methodology in some way across all these data partners. So getting access to the data is our biggest challenge. That's as far as we see.
Okay, great. We do have a question from Carolyn Krott, who's online. Carolyn, if you're online, please, I'm going to ask you to read your question. You can you have to press *7 to unmute. So once you do that, go ahead and read your question, Carolyn. Carolyn, are you online? Are you able to read your question? Again, press *7 to unmute. Okay, if not, I'll go ahead and read Carolyn's question. It's to Ram. The question is, are the NIJs in the matrix adjusted for exposure or the number of patients?
So the NIJ in the FAERS database that I presented in the first part of the talk, they are just simply the counts or the number of reports we get from all sources for that pair of the drug and adverse event combination. They are just raw reports, not adjusted for anything. The NIJ that when we had exposure information, we had two tables, one for NIJ and the other for the exposure information or time of exposure. In that context, the NIJ is also the number of adverse events or the number of events during different definition of exposure time. They were not adjusted for any other things.
Okay, great. So we are running out of time. I do want to thank again Dr. Tiwari and Huang for the terrific presentations. It's great to hear all of the progress that you're making. I want to let everyone know that the presentation materials from today's webinar will be posted on the Brookings website in the next couple of days. We also look forward to your participation in future Brookings webinars. Thank you again for participating and have a great afternoon.